After experiencing the transformative power of a regular meditation practice, it's natural to feel inspired to share this gift and guide others on their own journey of discovery through meditation. Join Buddhist teacher David Nichtern and Duncan Trussell, comedian and creator of the Netflix animated series The Midnight Gospel, for a free online event on Tuesday, May 7th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. They'll discuss the profound practices of mindfulness in Dharma Moon's renowned mindfulness meditation teacher training program. Get certified by Dharma Moon to teach meditation, lead group practice sessions, and work with individual students. Visit dharmamoon.com/beherenow for more info and to reserve your spot for the free online event with David Nichtern and Duncan Trussell.
Raghu, I'm back. I'm on a remote recording. Lucky me, I'm at Ram Dass's house in Maui. Beautiful, soulful Maui. We love it here. But I wanted to introduce this next podcast, which comes from this last retreat we did on Maui, actually. It's my live podcast that I do with Duncan Trussell. And we had incredible guest, Anne Lamott and Pete Holmes. So wait till you catch this one, and I'll tell you a little bit about it. But I do want to say a couple of things. These are my commercials, if you want to call it that. But one thing I want to mention is Saraswati and I are going on the Himalayan Yatra, following in Ram Dass's footsteps. And we're going to do that mid-September for about 10 days. There are still a couple of spots left. And I am going. So if anybody feels like this is a good idea to get yourself over and follow where Ram Dass and I and Krishnadas and others were in the places that Neem Karoli Baba sat and gave us darshan in those foothills. It's an amazing thing. And we're staying at a beautiful ashram in an apple valley called the Ramgarh Valley. And best ashram I ever stayed in, I'll tell you that. The bathrooms are incredible. That's a big deal. So that's happening. Now, also, Saraswati is doing a new thing, which is a women's healing, yoga healing retreat, and where it is extraordinary. It's in Rishikesh. Many of you have heard of Rishikesh, which is where the Beatles were with Maharishi, and it's the Ganges River flows through the town, and she found a just wonderful ashram right by the banks of the river with fire pits, and she's going to do fire puja and of course a lot of wonderful yoga, Tao flow yoga, which she teaches. And she is, as many of you know, because I've described it on the podcast, she's a Chinese medicine practitioner. So it's the combo of yoga and Chinese medicine and the Tao. Very, very unusual. And so the opportunity for you to join that, which is October 4th through 12th this fall, is something to consider, especially everyone who wants to. Now, it is for women, so you guys, you can't go. But you can try and come to the Himalayan Yatra. As I said, there's still a couple of spots left. And the other thing is, if none of this works out for you, Saraswati has got a plan to do one in the spring of next year. She does a couple every year. Some of them I join, and not sure about I'll be there in the spring, but she will be with a full complement of wonderful teachers. So that's March 13th through 24th, okay? You can go to nourishinglife.com/yatra, all right? And you can get in touch with Saraswati and you'll just any information, she will be there for you, she and her team. Also want to talk about a little bit about 1440.org, 1440 Multiversity, and there's a couple of things going on. One is with our wonderful friend, Frank Ostiseski. Frank is doing a Radical Compassion, Courage, and Connection retreat in August. What is it? August 2nd through 4th. So that's an opportunity to be with somebody who's just one of the finest teachers that we've had the pleasure to work with in our retreats here in Maui with Ram Dass. So I highly recommend Frank. He's such a good friend and a great, great being. And the other one is this Healing Chode thing, which I think I've mentioned before, but I have to reiterate. It's with Lama Mi'kmaq Tsetsen, and he's doing the Chode thing, which is cutting through destructive emotions and releasing negative energy. I don't think there's anyone amongst us who can say they wouldn't need to perhaps partake of this. And that's happening in the middle of July, 19 through 21. So go to 1440.org and check it out and register. Now, 1440, for those of you who don't know, is in Santa Cruz, and it's a beautiful and extraordinary campus. So these weekend retreats that they have or workshops are very valuable, even worth coming all the way from Toronto. Thought of that. That's where I'm from. Toronto is where I was born. Or Montreal, which is where I'm from. So there you go, 1440.org. So this, I really had the pleasure, Duncan and I had the pleasure to do this podcast, a live podcast that we do at the retreats twice a year. And really, we have the pleasure of having such wonderful, incredible personalities to chat with, and this time was Annie Lamott. And Annie is that New York Times bestseller. I mean, she's just a great writer. She communicates in a way that very few people do. She's just so clear, so funny, so insightful. So Annie was there along with Pete Holmes, and Pete's got this new book, Comedy Sex God, that's really, really a fun book, which came out a few months ago. So Pete was with us too. And, you know, Pete's an interesting guy because when he first came along to meet us and come to these retreats, it was several years ago. And it's extraordinary how the evolvement that we've seen in him and how he has opened up in a way that, and he talks about it in the book. So you'll be able to kind of check out just what happened to him. He grew up in a very Christian atmosphere. He is a Christian. So is Annie, by the way. And the way that they've both integrated the Eastern wisdom with their faith is really precious, very precious. So this is just a great podcast and great interaction between us all. And some real fun there, too. I had a little fun with Duncan. I kind of surprised him with something. It didn't quite work out the way I thought it would be. It would, but it was fun nonetheless. So there you go. This is Mind Rolling. And here is myself and Duncan Trussell and Annie Lamott and Pete Holmes. Enjoy.
I turned it purple.
I turned it purple.
Where are my people from Nashville? Okay, can you come up here? Something I wanted to share with you because they came, I met them here the first day I was here from Nashville. And
is that an old joke?
They have something to share with you, which
no, I'm asking you if you
it has some, you know, a little bit of...
Are they giving me a subpoena?
Not quite.
Am I being served?
Yeah, they're not serving. They're actually listeners of Duncan Trussell Family Hour. Okay.
Hello.
Yeah, so kind of an awkward situation, but I think
at least 75% of this group is parents. So I think it's an appropriate place to talk about this. We had an awkward series of questions from our 14-year-old son recently. And after maybe one or two about LSD and mushrooms,
yes,
we decided to ask him where he's getting some of these crazy ideas. And
I didn't sell him the mushrooms, man.
I'm more concerned about sex with aliens is what I'm more concerned about.
Yeah, I mean, we spent, after he revealed to us that he listens to your podcast every night before bed.
Cool.
It was like an hour and a half of untangling, sex with aliens, drugs, and, oh my God, Joey Diaz. Yeah.
Yes.
So I'm just kind of, like, the thing that I'm working through in my head is, like, as conscious broadcasters on the internet, like, what do you think your responsibility is to kids?
As a father.
Great question. Well, with psychedelics, whenever I talk about them, and it's becoming increasingly nerfed, but whenever I've talked about them, and I've podcasted for so long, there probably is a place where I blurted out something dumb, but I really try to say, I've had kids email me saying they want to take mushrooms.
Well, in reality, our son absolutely loves you. And we wanted to just give you a letter from him. He's a super fan, and we actually wanted to thank you because...
Oh, cool.
Being weird...
For a second, I'm so sorry I got paranoid because I thought you were about to be like, our kid, he got blasted on mushrooms. This is something you said on the podcast about how to have sex with
aliens. We're old hats.
Okay, great.
So, yeah.
We got discussion with the boy. He's good.
Great.
So thank you for being a, I guess, positive influence on our kid.
I guess positive. I hope. Thank you so much. You want me to read it?
Yeah, read it.
Okay. Thank you.
No, thank you.
What's his name? Ian. All right. Dear Duncan, I'm so incredibly high right now on those mushrooms you sold me. You won't believe this, but I just had sex with an alien. Actually, it was Joey Diaz. Okay, so, it says, Dear Duncan. Hey, Duncan, thank you for reading this. My name is Ian Lentz, and I live in Hendersonville, Tennessee with my parents, who I hope you met. What a sweetie. And my sister. I've been wanting to write you for a while, but never knew where to send it till this Maui retreat. Sadly, I'm not going. What a smart kid. But it's a perfect time to say thank you for being a very influential part of my life. I've been listening to your podcast for a little over a year now, and it has most definitely changed my perspective on life and how to treat others. On your podcast, I absolutely love your rants and stories. When I'm having a bad day or life sometimes monotonous, struggle arises, I love popping in an earbud and something, it'll... And what? Laughing. Laughing it away.
You read the letter?
Cool.
That was a breach of trust. The mom read the letter. You're like a postman with a postcard.
Also, please keep up the Ramdas teachings. Love hearing his wisdom, especially in your hilarious takings of it. Overall, thank you so much. I think you've definitely helped a lot of people, including me. It makes me very happy to know you're maybe reading this. Hare Krishna and much love, Ian. Oh, thank you so much.
Oh. It's 14 years old, so...
Thank you, thank you. Thanks. I'll send him an email. Thank you so much.
Duncan has been coming here for many years at this point, and I can't tell you how many people we see who've listened to the podcast and then moved over, listened to what we do with Ramdas, mind rolling that I do, that has had an extraordinary influence of bringing, because he loves Ramdas. He called me the first day he called me. It was all about Ramdas. And you have really, this letter just exemplifies something like you're a Pied Piper.
A Pied Piper?
Yeah.
Well, I love you guys so much. I love you. I love you guys. And I, this place is, man, when I came here, I was a mess in the beginning. I was so shattered and confused. And I'm so lucky to get to sit up here and look out at everybody and read a letter like that. The whole thing is just very dreamlike to me. And I think many people here feel that way about this, how lucky we are to get to hang out with each other. And I mean, I know I get up here a lot of times and just blurt out cynical shit because I don't have anything else to offer because you're all enlightened. But my general feeling is one of right now just intense gratitude. There's no way I would have been able to get married and have a baby and without like the stability this satsang offers, you know. So thank you, because without you, I don't think that letter would have been written, because I don't know what I'd be burping out. I'd be doing satanic death metal guttural orcish Tolkien grunts in the podcast if not for this group of people. So thank you.
Have we started yet?
No. Annie Lamott, everybody.
How will we know?
I host a podcast and I'm confused as to whether or not we've started. I mean, is there going to be like a hello?
Hey, everybody. No. Welcome to the Ram Dass podcast.
You see?
I'm here with Raghu Marcus, Pete Holmes from You Made It Weird, and Annie Lamott, who has written over, God, what, 500 earth-shattering books? Annie Lamott and Raghu Marcus, the director of the Love, Serve, Remember Foundation.
Okay.
All right.
He didn't like it.
This has been brought to you by Blue Chew. If you...
Okay, we've been talking about all these heady subjects over these last 5 days. And a listener of Mind Rolling actually sent this in to me, Glenn Desmer. I'd like to read it. Please don't talk to me about pure awareness or dwelling in the absolute. I want to see how you treat your partner, your kids, your parents, your precious body. Please don't lecture me about the illusion of the separate self, or how you achieved permanent bliss in just 7 days. I want to feel a genuine warmth radiating from your heart. I want to hear how well you listen, taking information that doesn't fit your personal philosophy. I want to see how you deal with people who disagree with you. Don't tell me how awakened you are, how free you are from ego. I want to know you beneath the words. I want to know what you're like when troubles befall you. If you can fully allow your pain and not pretend to be invulnerable, if you can feel your anger yet not step into violence, if you can grant safe passage to your sorrow yet not be its slave, if you can feel your shame and not shame others, if you can screw up and admit it, if you can say sorry and really mean it, if you can be fully human in your glorious divinity, don't talk to me about spirituality, friend. I'm really not that interested. I only want to meet you, know your precious heart, know the beautiful human struggling for the light before the, quote unquote, the spiritual one, before all the clever words. A man named Jeff Foster, who I don't know. Some of that you might have written. Huh? So, yeah, talk about that for a minute. The way that we indeed take on these highfalutin concepts and maybe bypass a lot of it, and yet when we are just out with each other and not being fully present, what does that, any of that mean?
Yeah. I don't think I traffic in highfalutin concepts, but I really kind of stay at the level of what I teach the Sunday school kids and the songs we sing together. So it's not, I don't think it's really very erudite, but I can tell you a very human story. So Neil and I got married a few weeks ago, and so I don't know how to be married because I forgot to get married before Medicare, I think that if somebody's sad or rattled, that you go fix it, right? So then you don't have to get an annulment or a divorce, especially in the first month. So Neil came home from he goes to a lot of live music. He came home and I was watching TV, a violent show, really violent cop show or something with my son, Sam. And Neil came in and he was clearly a little bit cranky or surprised that Sam and I were still in the living room. So he went into the bedroom and I thought, oh, it's over. Neil's cranky. And Neil has had a moment of clarity and he realized this was the biggest mistake of his life. And then I realized I didn't like him at all and that I had to find a loophole. And then I thought he was glowering in the bedroom. And I told myself the story. I mean, his spiritual path is a lot about releasing identities that you have clung to for your entire life and about these stories we tell ourselves that define our days, really, these stories that we're about to screw up or if people get to know us too well, they'll recoil like as from hot flame. And so I pictured him in the bedroom glowering, and then I had a moment of clarity, and I thought, I can't do anything about that, and if he's not going to tell me about it, how can I meet him halfway? And I just have to release this, and God's got it anyway, and I'll just keep watching the show till it ends. So it ended about 20 minutes later, and I went into the bedroom, and he was reading a book and playing with the kitten, right, the whole time. He'd been reading a spiritual book and playing with the kitten, and I'd made up this elaborate thing to explain that I was having a moment of, my parents had a really arctic marriage. And so if there's not this river of euphoria and bliss and respect and love, I feel like it's all over, you know? And so it was so funny because he wasn't just reading a spiritual book. He was playing with a kitten. He couldn't have been happier. He couldn't have been happier. So anyway, I don't even know what a podcast is really. So I don't think I can screw it. My son has a site called, I think it's called HelloHumans.co, right? You were on it, Duncan. So you can go hear Sam Lamott and Duncan, who Sam worships, at HelloHumans.co because com was taken. HelloHumans.com was taken, so it's HelloHumans.co. And he does this with brilliant people, and I still don't really know what a podcast is. So I figure that somehow, can you edit a podcast?
You can.
Oh, you can edit.
But can I say you're doing, by plugging another podcast, you're doing podcasts perfectly.
Okay.
That's 99% of what podcasts are. Pete Holmes, you made it weird. Thank you, Anne Lamott. That's what you do.
Okay.
You nailed it.
Okay, good.
This is just like radio, but on the internet.
It's radio on the internet, but you can edit it somehow.
Well, they can edit the radio, too.
Oh, that's true. Okay, just forget I'm here, okay?
It's not live.
Oh, it's not.
Yeah, that's what you're thinking. It's not live radio. Okay. It's recorded live to tape, as they say.
Live to tape.
Live
Got
to
it.
Tape.
I'm on it. Okay.
You are such a treasure.
Please
wow.
Please continue.
Me continue?
Well, if you want to.
Well, I'll tell you what that poem made me think of.
Yeah,
that was a poem, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That was poetry. That was beautiful.
Yeah.
We both come, Annie, you and I come from the Christian tradition. Mm-hmm. So something that really, when I first found Ram Dass, that really spoke to me was the idea of phony holy. Because I was phony holy. I don't want to speak for other Christians, but I sure was. We were very friendly in church, and then when we got in our cars, we were like, you asshole, as soon as we...
Yeah, you took my space.
Of course.
Yeah.
But as soon as we were out, it was all, hey, buddy! It was very friendly. And a lot of religion has been, in my opinion, sort of reduced and pasteurized and homogenized and misunderstood, and narratives have been lost, and it's sort of become membership, and certainty worship, and it's also become about morality. Mm-hmm. And I don't think what Jesus was about was morality. I think what he was about and what we're about here is about merging with God. It's about an inner transformation. Mm-hmm. And this is really a basic point, but it was really mind-blowing for me to consider that we were sort of putting the cart before the horse. You know, our fruit wasn't ripe, but we would paint it the right color and we would pretend that it was ripe. So I would be kind to you, even though I hate you, because Jesus said to love your neighbor, but he never really said like your neighbor. I think that's an important distinction. Mm-hmm. Because when we love your neighbor, who are we loving?
Right.
We're loving another soul. We're loving awareness. There's tons of people I don't like, and I'm not in this to pretend I like everybody. That's horseshit, and that's phony holy. But here's the full circle. What I'm hearing in that poem is when we've merged with God, when we've found our true identity, and when we've sort of had that experience, chances are you aren't going to lie. Chances are you aren't going to steal or cheat or be hurtful or ugly. We've just got it. It's a beautiful thing to be moral, but it's an even beautifuler thing to be moral as a representation of something that's occurred inside, instead of doing the most Western interpretation of the spiritual journey ever, which is, oh, once I go through that journey, once I die and once I'm resurrected, I'll have equanimity. I'll be peaceful. I'll be loving. I'll just pretend to be that because we want it. And we want to know that we have it because we want to be in the group and we want to wear the jersey and we want to go to the parade. Mm-hmm. But really, I'd rather have an honest jerk who's trying to transform himself than a fake holy person pretending to like me when I can see their jaw clenching in that way that I'm like, you think I'm an asshole. Tell me. Fine. I can deal with it because it's not me anyway and it's not you anyway. That's love your neighbor. Mm-hmm. He's not calling us to be phony. Mm-hmm. He's calling us to see past. Duncan, you said something that changed my life. You said, remember, when you meet someone, you're meeting their bodyguard.
That's a great line.
That's their ego. It's
Can
the
I have
thing.
That?
Please, be an honor.
That's a great line.
So we can love the bodyguard. We can not like the bodyguard. We can be annoyed by the bodyguard.
I'm annoyed by the poem.
By the what?
By the poem.
Yeah, I'm sorry to cut.
Yeah, that's great.
This guy, this is like the most awkward. I felt like
What's
the poem
wrong?
Reminded me like something like an Uber driver would be saying. And you'd be like, so, like, God, you have so many conditions. How many conditions does this person have to talk to them? Like, I want to see you kiss your father. I want to see you smell a flower. I want to see you get stung by bees. And then look in the mirror and forgive the bees. This guy's got problems, man. This is like the worst Tinder date of all time. There's someone you go on a date with and they start off with like 19 things you're supposed to be like before they talk to you. What a jerk. No offense to whoever wrote that, but ugh. Blah, he's a lonely man.
But that's said, Duncan, that's why I said what I said, because I'll admit that that rubbed me the wrong way at points too. But what we're talking about is our behavior. But what's way more interesting to me is who's observing the behavior in me and who's observing you observe the behavior in you. It's fun to go like, oh, sure, you talk about the great white light, but you're a jerk to your partner. I'm right there with you. But we can also go one step further and be like, who's observing all of that? Can we try and get into that place further? But I also think that might be what he's saying. Is it like, it's great to talk about your meditation practice and stuff.
It's as simple as that.
I think you're right. But there's something about it that Duncan and I think I know what you're talking about.
Who wrote
that?
Can I
just say one quick line that I love that made me... What's your podcast, by the way?
It's called You Made It Weird.
Oh, I love it.
You have an open invitation. It would be a dream.
I want to read this poem again because I'm old and I'm spaced out. But I want to say, you know, Ajah Shanti had the greatest line. He said, the part of you that sees you're afraid is not afraid.
I love that.
Don't you love that?
Ooh, is dinner ready? I smell
it. Yeah. The part of you that sees that you're afraid is not afraid.
This all goes back to that thing I read yesterday from Ram Dass about awareness.
I'm okay, thank and you. God, that was loving.
The clouds that represent...
Dude, that's what I'm talking about. So last time I sat with Ram Dass, this has been on my heart to share. It won't take long. I was sitting with him, this was a couple of weeks ago, and he goes, ego. Anytime you're going, I want ego. And I'm not going to talk for you guys, I'm going to talk for me. I've been to a lot of these retreats, and I get saturated in I Want. I want what Ram Dass has. I want what I'm bidding on. I want to feel my kirtan. I want to have a good conversation at dinner. I want to have a good swim. I want to have a good meditation. I want to write down the good thing at the good talk and remember it and get me to the good place. There's so much want. And what I love about what Ramesh does in the morning when we're just sitting together is he's pointing back and going, remember, you're that. What you're looking for is what you're looking with, is what St. Francis said. God, guru, and self are one. That's in Be Here Now. I can't hear that enough. What KD said, he said, I miss my guru. Someone said, don't be silly. Your guru is looking out your eyes right now. Mm-hmm. So it's fun. I'm not saying let's not play. I like wanting. I like being in the marketplace. I bid on two things and I won. It's fun.
You did?
I won.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Yo. How cool.
But what was the sky with those clouds? What was unchanging? Who cares about this podcast? You know what I mean? Like, it's fine, but it's not. There's a bigger game being played. And I think that's what we're all drawn to with Ram Dass is he's like, look at the dance. Look at the Leela. Look at the play of form. We're all pretending to be different things, but we're just talking to ourselves, and it's fine. And this one's Annie Lamont, and that one's Raghu, and that one has a hat. And that's fun. But when we can stop wanting and realize you are it, you are that, it's done. It's done. Mm-hmm. Oof.
Oof. Do we have to talk to the other two? Is that like podcast manners to talk to everyone?
I don't know what they are.
Yeah, no, it is manners.
Oh, it is? Yeah. Okay.
Oh, get out of here. There's no manners in podcasting.
I told you it wouldn't be long, and I'm done. That's all I wanted to say. No, you don't. I mean, it's fine. I'll accept it.
You know what you were saying did remind me. There's this story Ram Dass tells about the time someone called him freaking out on acid. You know that story?
What?
You guys know that story?
I'm going to need more.
Someone called him. This is an interesting story because I guess in those days he just gave his number out to anybody. But someone called him just freaking out on acid on Orange Sunshine. And they were like, Ram Dass, I'm going insane. I'm going crazy. I've lost my mind. I need your help. And he's like, okay, but first, can you put the person on the phone who is logical enough to call me.
Yeah.
Because whoever you are is completely bonkers, right?
Yeah.
But it was what you're talking about is this idea that Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche talks about that I love, which is that confusion is a condition of enlightenment. And so there's a part of you that should be confused. How can you not be confused right now? This is the most, I don't know how many.
Duncan's confused.
So is Tucker Carlson. I just saw Tucker Carlson. This is what I mean. Tucker Carlson on Fox News seriously had a piece on aliens, on the fact that people are seeing UFOs all the time. And that's when smoke starts coming out my ears, because I'm like, well, I guess the simulator is breaking down that we're all living in. It's that weird a time. So people, you might not be, but many people I know are blowing their fuses.
Oh, right. I wasn't saying I'm not confused.
Well, some people aren't, which is real. But I guess what I'm saying is that moment of realizing that you are confused, you must also be the awareness of the confusion. Mm-hmm. And now you've found out that you're on this fascinating continuum that is theoretically connected to nirvana, enlightenment, whatever you want to call it, bliss, you know. Mm-hmm. And that is a pretty interesting thing because you start realizing, do you ever think this, Annie? Do you ever think I'm actually more actively pushing away joy than I am pushing away suffering? You know what I mean? When you start realizing it's more as though you're in a weird war with love itself than with the part of you that hurts.
Well, my understanding is that when we do too much joy, like for women, if you get too big and juicy, and if for both genders, all genders, if you get too joyful and your life gets too big, the long bony finger from childhood comes down and said, you said, and you've broken the contract to stay small and to stay manageable and to stay under the domination of fear. And for me, as an addict of absolutely every behavior and product, I constantly recreate that feeling of being either defective or terrified because it's home. And so it's not like I'm pushing away happiness. It's just that to stay alive when I was young was dependent on not outshining my mother or my older brother, and not and women, 50s and 60s, do not get big and juicy. If they're big and juicy, they're exiled. No one will want you, right? And so to do that is to break the contract, and that is terrifying because it does mean that the God finger comes down and said, you said, you actually signed a written contract at 3 that you would not be too huge and wild and juicy. So the huger and wilder and juicier we get, you know, you just keep having to adjust to that and be and parent your own self that you're trying to summon these parents from, and you have to go, it's okay, because it's going to make help them do the same thing.
You know, I'm circling back here to what this theme is for this retreat, emptiness, excavating that habit, that home habit that we all have, mm-hmm. and we all recognize mm-hmm. it's the thing that we feel day to day that makes us comfy. To think like that, mm-hmm. to believe in our thoughts mm-hmm. and our story. Mm-hmm. So emptying, you know, circle back, the excavation of that mm-hmm. is the process of understanding mm-hmm. emptiness. So, but you guys in particular, we've talked about these kinds of concepts to bring it down to some kind of practical understanding and being able to use it on a day-to-day basis. So you, what is your takeaway from... you know, especially Bob and how he was explaining emptiness and what it isn't and what yeah. it is. And in terms of, is it something you could really think of as incorporated in your day-to-day life? What did you get?
I want to answer it, but I think I'll have to, I have to think about these retreats for a while before I even know too enough to say. I mean, I don't know with the emptiness stuff. It's so profound and big and I love Bob's. I mean, I took away from Bob's beautiful way of teaching Buddhism. You know, he reminds me of the time I saw the Dalai Lama in Anaheim. Oh man, it was so embarrassing because somebody decided to Hollywood it up, and they had all these like stars wishing the Dalai Lama happy birthday, like, you know, like here's MC Hammer to wish you a happy birthday. But the Dalai Lama, you could tell he didn't know who MC Hammer was, but he's like politely beaming at these narcissists. No offense, MC Hammer. I don't know if you're a narcissist. But his translator was there. And his translator...
Jinpa.
Yes. Jinpa. And you see their playfulness together. And the way he kind of like... He's like... I don't know. It seems like he was sitting behind the Dalai Lama's chair. And he like... pokes his head out and smiles and then whispers. And you see this like playful beauty in Buddhism that is the opposite of, if you've had some preconceived notion about it being this sterile, boring, dogmatic, monotone, kind of like depersonalized doom religion or whatever, you realize it's like incredibly playful and such a reflection of reality, which is so beautiful and full of love. And so that's what I got out of it. So if that's emptiness, maybe that's what emptiness is. I don't know.
What about just what Annie just talked about, that the perspective that we're seeing everything is from this very comfy, habitual pattern home place, and the idea, the emptiness is empty of that place. So getting to a place where you understand, at least at first, that this is not who you are.
Well, you know, Annie teaches me about love, not emptiness so much. And I would much rather I'll take the love. And the other, I was looking at my son and loving him and thinking like, man, who gives a shit about emptiness? This kid is beautiful. And you know that love, I understand. Emptiness It feels like something I'm talk about in a hot tub when I'm tripping or something. But love, that
oh,
to
Duncan,
me.
I, that's interesting. I want to put this to you because I just had a baby. She's in the back.
Beautiful baby.
Beautiful baby. Mm-hmm. And I wrote a book, and the chapter about Leela, her name is Leela, is called Luminous Emptiness. Because oh, really? my experience, that's what we call her. I sometimes call the baby Luminous Emptiness. So I'm going to put this to you. When I'm with her, it's like what they said about Maharaji. It's a mountain of emptiness and love. And that's what I feel when I'm with the baby. I can't compare. I wasn't with Maharaji. But it's emptiness. She doesn't know she's American. She doesn't know she's human. She doesn't know she's white.
Yes.
She doesn't know I'm her parents. That's emptiness. She's not thinking in concepts. She's just beaming awareness.
Yes.
That is an emptiness I think you could get. I don't want to go like, what's in the nothing and beyond the nothing, nothing, and the triple nothing, and the gate nothing, and the
triple all those nothing.
Triple nothing.
That's a lot of nothing.
But is there a nothing beyond that? Nothing. I understand that. But when I'm with my baby, I go, this is an emptiness that's not trying to convince me, like I'm trying to convince you, I'm a person and listen to me and love me and agree with me. My baby's just licking her foot. That's emptiness.
You know, that's...
And that's love.
And that's love.
Luminous it's, awareness.
It's as
love.
Indiscriminate as the light. She loves everything. Or the rain. She's just giving it out. Yeah. And that's what everybody says Maharaji was like. I have to feel like that's what Christ was like. And so when I think of emptiness, I'm not doing the freshman year smoking a joint in my dorm room and going like, yeah, but Buddhists believe it's nothing. I'm talking about false self, shredding false self, what Paul calls the sin of the flesh, the false you. Yeah. My baby has no false her. She's just,
My baby is very sinful. See, that's the difference. No, our child is a gambling addict. I don't know how he's
our baby
doing.
Vapes.
Well, our baby goes to Morongo Casino and has basically wrecked our... We can't keep him away from the slots. And if he's not there, he's got those new gambling apps. Watch out, gang. So yeah, I don't see emptiness when I look at my baby. I see a neck tattoo and I'm like, how did he get that?
But don't you...
What's that?
Riff aside, don't you, though?
See emptiness?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to go off this.
Empty of that
of
habitual
self
that we all know so well. The self that is looking out at everything, defending everything.
The
manipulating it away from...
I'm not going to say it.
You won't?
You guys want me to say it so bad, I'm not going to say it.
Yes.
What, are you going to put me in some weird cult hot box out back if I'm not like, yes, I see emptiness?
You got it. That's it. That's where you're
no, doing. I'm shocked you don't agree because that is right out of your brain, man. I feel like I stole that idea from you.
Did you?
Yes.
You'll be hearing from my emptiness
lawyer. By the way,
lawyer.
These guys have been... These guys have been jousting for many, many years. Okay?
Well, we're dear friends. But it's basic Ram Dass. It's spacesuit Ram Dass. That's the emptiness. She doesn't have a spacesuit yet. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Annie?
Yes. Have we started?
Not yet. No.
Okay.
But I know that when we started talking about emptiness and so on, you steered it elsewhere in terms of your experience, in terms of the Sunday school class. Uh-huh. But I'd like to... Did anything happen to bring some other kind of perspective that might...
You mean since I've been here?
Yes, since you've been here.
Well, it's been I'm kind of with Duncan a little bit. Like, I'm not gonna give you the satisfaction, right, of using emptiness as one of my themes, but I'm too angry. And
me too.
We need 500 words on emptiness.
You're both going in the back of that thing. The cult thing, yeah.
But, you know, you get immersed in you know, 90% of the conversation has been Buddhist or Hindu, and it's been a lot about emptiness and being awareness and just being love energy. And, of course, it all sinks in, and I love it all. But it's not my nomenclature, you know? It's not my vocabulary or my my way of thinking about things. I really am, I really feel more like a missionary here, not at this conference. I mean, I feel I'm complete. I was begging Raghu to have to realize that I wouldn't fit in here at all when it turned out Sharon wasn't going to be able to hear and be here, and that I'm, you know, I'm just such, so uneducated and so. I do believe that great line of Tillich's that the opposite of faith is not doubt but certainty. And so I really don't know about anything. But the emptiness rings a kind of temporary, yes, I'm sure that's true sort of feeling. But at the same time, it doesn't really give me bread for the journey. It doesn't draw me closer. It doesn't draw me in the direction of that. Children do. And
that's crazy.
And I love babies. I'm a notorious baby snatcher, but what I loved so much was the humanity of these wise men. Like just how, you know, just our realness breaks my heart. It just the realness of us, the vulnerability of us. People, the alcoholics and Al-Anons and so on. We've been meeting in secret covens. And, you know, and what we do is we don't have this position we come from where we're really happy, joyous, and free and nearly enlightened. We just say, I had a part of a day that was so hard and scary, and I actually hated everyone. And now I just want to go home and be with my dog, and that will be enlightenment. And we all go, yeah, I get it. I completely get it. You know, and yesterday I had some very, very scary thoughts, and what I knew to do was not to pursue intellectual Hindu or Buddhist thought. I just thought I need to be with a safe person. That, to me, is my spiritual training, is that if I can tell the truth to a safe person, then I'm saved. And so I went in, I found Neil, and I told him my very scary thought, and then, oh, they still like this regular. And then I just started crying, and I don't know why, and I was in here. We were sitting right where the man with the red shirt and next to the guy in the white T-shirt was. I was sitting right there, and I just began to cry. And it wasn't that crying that feels so healing and that baptizes you and hydrates you and waters the seeds at your feet. It was like the crying of a five-year-old, you know, where tears were streaming down my face without me, you know, rattled into it, just so vulnerable, so existentially clueless. And so then Ramesh came over because we've really bonded, and he looked at me with tears, and he goes, what are you crying about? And I told Neil later, I said, that was the moment when I got the Maharaji moment, because he would have said, what are you crying about, you know, and with love, you know, just kind of like a child would, like, I'm noticing you're crying, right? And so I cried for a while, but I told the people in our meeting and Neil these terrifying thoughts that if you all heard them, you would go, you know what you would go? I was going to think you would say something negative, but you go, God, thank you for saying that out loud. I was there Saturday morning. I felt, you know, mentally ill. I felt like a fraud. I felt exhausted by life here. This place on earth has not been a good match for me. I'm very sensitive, and everything hurts my feelings. And so, but that's what, to me, I'm drawn to, is the telling the truth to a couple of safe people and them hearing me and saying, thank you. Can I tell you, I did that too just the other day. Can I? And I go, yeah. They say, do you have a minute? I say, yeah. That to me is Jesus. Do you have a minute? Yes. Jesus is yes. What's going on?
Satsang, we call it. Community. Satsang,
yes, the precious community. Yeah.
And you fit in here like a pea in a pod. I hope you keep coming back every single time. You're such a great teacher.
On that subject, she just agreed to come back in a year, in the spring of 2020.
But, you know, I also wanted to say last year, the two of us, you weren't here, so it sucked. But the two of us soldiered on and did a podcast, I think in your room or someone, and it was really deep and intense. But it started off, the topic was death, and letting go of the fear, becoming friends with death, and understanding that death was like the train home. And Duncan started, I didn't know Duncan yet, you know, and so it was like Bobcat Goldthwait, you know? And he was shouting, he was going to Raghu, he's going, why is this on death? Why am I immersed in death? You're freaking out all the young people. They don't want it, right? They don't want to be in Maui talking about death. This sucks, you know? And
it's a very good Bobcat Goldthwait. Yeah. It's very good.
So I felt kind of the same way about emptiness. And but at the time I was invited to be a speaker, Raghu was, it was called the Gift of Desperation, G-O-D. So I said... Can I do anything I want? Can I read? Can I talk about anything? I know nothing about emptiness. And he said, anything.
That's true.
That's true.
I wondered what you would think about this, Annie, because, again, I come from the same lineage as you. Yeah. And emptiness was not a principle of what I was raised with. But it's actually the first page of Be Here Now. You kept saying the heart cave, which is the first words of the brown part of Be Here Now. But the second part is a Bible verse, which is one of my favorite Bible verses, which is, lest ye be converted and become as little children, ye shall not see the kingdom of God. So that, when I'm talking about these like lectures and getting concepts and having deep conversations and stuff, how could the love of God be excluded to those who understand or believe a concept correctly, I think is what Jesus is saying here. He's saying you need to be like a child. It's about unlearning, right, false self, exactly, rather than learning. So again, I'm not even being critical. I love we're doing one of the lectures right now. So I love them, but it can't be what it's about. It can't be you go, that's the one phrase, that's the one definition of love, and now I've got it. F that. You're here. You're in your own way. You're, my friend Michael Gunger says, you're rearranging your prison cell to feel more free when the door behind you is unlocked. Be a child.
Can I have that?
It's in his book, okay, but you can footnote it.
Okay.
It's like, cut it out. This is play. This is satsang. This is love in movement. And it's great to share these ideas and to get excited, but cut it out. Mm-hmm. Lest you be converted and become as little children, not scholars, not experts, not memorizing verses or songs, mm-hmm, or anything. Ram Dass also said to me, he goes, Maharaji's in you. It's in you. It's not me. If it's in me, it's in you. And he said it was in me. It's in you. Mm-hmm. So I'm just saying this again. It's my passion on this retreat. Anybody I can grab and tell is that my first couple retreats were very dark times for me because I kept going, I missed Maharaji, he died. Or I'll never have that, or I'll never get that, or I don't know this, or I can't meditate that long, or I don't know this language. Stop it. Be a child. Get in the ocean, you dumb shits. You're already there. My hope is that we could just put our minds aside and just be enlightened just for a second. Just do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The part of you that's saying you're not is wrong. That's what I was saying. Pete, this is a line from my book. Pete is not enlightened, but I am. Mm-hmm. Duncan is not enlightened, but I am. You're what's disrupting the song on the radio. And again, I love images. Carl Jung says images transform us, not ideas. So I've
become a non-dualist.
I love this photo. I sing to this photo and I go, make no mistake, when I watch a great kirtan, I go, I was great tonight. That was my voice. Mm. That was my voice. Mm. That's a carving of me.
Mm. Well, and
stop thinking it's somewhere else. Don't plan next retreat, I'll get there. You're already there. How many great teachers say this before we just go like, maybe they're right? And then to Duncan's point, our incarnation is not a failure either. The stuff that's in the way, the best way to work with your karma is to have some. Mm-hmm. So play with it, work with it. I'm not right. I'm not right. As Jesus said, why do you call me good? Who is good? No one is good. Mm-hmm. Right. He also said, let the weeds grow with the wheat. Mm-hmm. Work with it. It's not a flaw in the system. Mm-hmm. As Ramdas says, you're in third grade. Take the curriculum. It's not a mistake. We don't have to renounce it, but you also don't have to identify with it. Mm-hmm. Here's Pete. Oh, I'm
emptiness.
Taking over.
You just described emptiness.
There you go. Well, I did put that to Annie because the childlike thing that Jesus calls us to, mm-hmm. or the birds of the air. Birds of the air, what are they? They're empty. Uh-huh. Yep. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. That helps me understand what the Buddhists are getting at.
Yeah.
When he says, look at the birds, they don't worry about where their next meal is coming from. That means they're not thinking. They just...
Don't you think that's a weird thing he said, though? They don't worry about where their next meal's coming from?
Well, he doesn't really say that.
He seems like someone who doesn't... Oh, okay.
I mean, that's sort of implied, I think. But yes, keep going.
I was just going to say, it seems like somebody who doesn't watch birds.
They do seem pretty frantic.
They're constantly wanting food. I saw a little girl covered in pigeons out there. They're totally freaking out about where their next meal is coming from.
That is true.
Also, they're not empty. Birds are filled with gunk and guts.
All right, all right. Shut up. Okay, I'm going to... Did you want to say something, Annie?
I forgot what I was going to say, except that was the first time I met Duncan was in the panic room of being upset that the topic was death. That was the first time I ever met you.
Yes.
And then we just fell in love, and I came home, and I told my son, I met this guy. You would love him. He has a podcast. And I said, his name is something like Russell Trundle. And he said, and he looked at me, and again, I mean, no matter what age, you will be a mortification to your children. You just have to live with that. That's the weeds. You will be. And he, all the blood drains from his face. He goes, you know, tell me you don't mean Duncan Trussell. And I said, yes, that's it, Duncan Trussell. He goes, oh, my God. Oh, my God, Mom. I mean... It's so great for you to be carrying the message to the young people, you know, because we're all less young, right, than we were. And it's so great for the young people who are faced with things that are different than we were faced, the climate, you know, the terror of what is my grandchild going to be living in 20 years? I'll be 85. I don't know. Maybe I'll still be here. Who knows? Not a single person here knows where we'll be, but... My little guy will be 29, his dad's age right now, and what will it be like? And so for you, you know, and then his mind, even though he's not drinking or vaping yet, his mind will do what our minds do, which is the, oh, no, what if, oh, my God, what? He'll be afraid. He's human. He's going to be afraid. He's going to have a lot of anxiety. He's going to compare his insides with other people's outsides, and other people's outsides always look so good. And then this other voice in him will be saying, oh, what is? And for you guys to be taking up the mantle and to be saying to them, got a minute? You know, because I think you can save them a lot. I have to tell you really quickly, the time that I met, that I called Ram Dass by phone, because what I started to say was, you guys can save people a lot of time. And to say, if someone says to me, hi, I'm an alcoholic, I'm still drinking, I've got it. I've got them. I know what their mornings are like. I know what their minds are like. I know how their bodies feel. I know what they wake to, the shame and the animal confusion. If one of the young people says to you, oh, I'm going through this, I don't know, you go, you know what? I got it. Yeah. Do you have a minute? Yeah. And the word, do you have a minute? Yeah. If you're cool, they're going to sit with us. You know, I have dreadlocks, and so young people will sit with me. And but I remember when I was 30, I'd been sober 2 or 3 years.
They think you have weed.
I know that you have. That's right. That's right. but when I was 30 and I'd been sober a couple years, and I had always been into Ram Dass and into the Eastern and the Hindu and the everything, but I am a Christian. I didn't mean to be. I converted a year before I got sober. I was drunk, okay? The only meditation really is contemplative prayer, which is very beautiful, but it's, you have to work into it. You can't, it's just not a Band-Aid. So I went to the phone book in Marin, and I looked up Ram Dass, not there. This is 30 years ago. Do any of you young people know about, like, phone books? Raise your hand if you've ever seen a phone book. It's a few of you.
It's where they print a portion of the internet for you to throw away.
Right, right. It's right. And so I looked up Ram Dass, not there. Look up Richard Alpert, not there. And then I looked up Dass, Ram. Dass, comma, Ram. And his phone number was there. And I called him up and I said, hi, I'm Annie. I'm a alcoholic and a Christian. And I just feel really alone right now. And so I called you. And he said what he says. I'm so glad you called. Something inside of you is so sturdy and permeable and, you know, breathing good. What's going on? So we talked about meditation, and he said, you know, the Eastern Church has Lord Jesus Christ, Son of God, have mercy on me. And that's, you hear mercy, and you think, yo, mercy, you know. But anyway, so I've never told him that story,
but
that he was listed in the phone book under Dass, comma, Ram.
Servant of Ram, here I am. That's what he's been doing all these years. I'm going to make a left turn here with this podcast. I have talked to several of us here, and there, as we saw, there's maybe just under half are people who have never been here before. And some of them are wondering, what is this deal about this guru, right? Because they've had we haven't really said anything about him. We talked about love and so on. And one of the things that other people generally expect is for us to tell all the miracle stories. Mm-hmm. And I want to read a story that's not out and out a miracle story, but gives some sense of who this being is and our experience of him back then. I thought, just before this retreat is over, so it's a little bit of indulgence here on your own part.
Yeah, go ahead.
One day, Maharaji was walking down a street in Vrindavan, which is the town of Krishna and Radha in India, in the middle of the summer. It was like 120 degrees in the middle of the day. And coming in the other direction was this sadhu with the jutta, dreadlocks, ashes. And they saw each other. And they ran, jumped around, and they hugged. And they jumped around and danced. And they were just like, they were so happy to see each other. And this sadhu says, Baba, I can't believe we're meeting after 40 years. I haven't seen you since we were in the mountains together. Everyone was they were both so happy. And they hung around for a few minutes, and then Maharaji says, okay, brother, I have to go now. So you go, and I'll go this way, you go that way. And the sadhu says, I'm not leaving you after all this time I've found you. I can't go now. He said, no. Maharaji said, you don't understand. You don't want to hang out with me. I'm always around householders. I'm with worldly people all the time. It's not good for you. It's not good for you. You don't even know me. Don't come with me. He said, there's no way. The sadhu said, no way I'm leaving you, Baba. And they argued about it. Finally, Maharaji says, okay. And they took off. And they started walking towards Mathura, which is 18 kilometers away in the middle of the day. In those days, there was just a desert between Vrindavan and Mathura. So they were literally dying of thirst. And in the distance, they saw a well. And they started running to this well. And Maharaji gets there first. And there's a woman getting water from the well with a bucket. And Maharaji runs up and he puts his hands out like to get some water. And he says, Ma, pour water for me to drink. Right? So she pours the water and he's drinking like this. And now the sadhu arrives and he puts out his gourd cup. And the woman pours water. And pours water in it. And while she's pouring, Maharaji starts chatting her up because he chatted everybody up 24/7. And he says, where are you from, Ma? Where's your village? What's your caste? Turns out she's an untouchable. Mm. When the sadhu heard that, he completely flipped out. He takes his gourd and he furiously smashes it down on the ground. and he starts screaming at Maharaji, "What have you done? Look what you've done. You've gotten me into this, and this is my only thing, my only gourd. I needed this for everything, and now it's become impure, and I can't use it anymore. How could you do this to me?" And Maharaji going, "What? What happened? What's going on? I thought you were a sadhu." He said, "What's a caste for a sadhu? What is this? I don't understand. What is this attachment?" And the sadhu saw what happened. And then Maharaji said, Maharaji told this story to a devotee. "He washed my feet with his tears and went back to the mountains to finish his work." Mm-hmm. That's the Maharaji we know. Mm-hmm. And that body that we knew back then. Mm-hmm. That's what it wasn't about the miracles. Mm-hmm. I mean, we were, as Ram Dass said, in the beginning, he tricked us with the miracles, and we were all, you know, basically tricked out our minds. You know, mm-hmm. we could no longer think that that was going to be any way for us to operate in life. And as Ram Dass said, it was the love. Absolutely.
Well, same with Jesus, you know. He's offering the same, the entry into the kingdom of heaven, into love and into getting out of yourself to become a person for others and to live in this holy sense of self. And it's like, thank you for sharing whatever. And so he turns water into wine, right. And he has feeds 5,000 people, which is not a magic trick. But it seems to the people who are eating that it is. It's actually just a shift in consciousness in those 5,000 people who begin to bring out the food that they have. You know, before, you know, I pull up the ladder, I've got mine, and all of a sudden, the thin candy M&M shell around them breaks open, and they're like, "Do you have anything to eat? Have this. Have my sandwich. Have my bread," and everyone eats. So that is the miracle. But, you know, that's how you get people to start talking about you and to say, you know what? There's this guy. Can I tell a quick Bible story? Yeah. So there's, I can't remember where it is, but it's a woman at the well. And Jesus comes into a very, very poor village. And there's a woman standing at the well, and she's clearly a prostitute. And he says to her, will you draw me some? She's a Samaritan, right? The worst you could be, untouchable. She's a Samaritan prostitute, which is what I love so much about Jesus. Is that this is who he wants to be with. And he says, will you draw down your ladle and bring me up some water? And she's like, what do you want? Why would you drink water from the filth of me? You know, she's there midday because all the good women have come in the morning, right? When it's cool, they come to get the good part of the day when it's cool. And then she can only come when no one else is there. And he says to her something about her husband. And she mentions her husband. And he says, well, you don't have a husband. And she said, and then he says, you've had 5 husbands, air quotes. And she's viewed by the community in contempt, like people would view the streetwalkers or the transvestites. And he says to her, he gives her the invitation. Do you want to be a part of this family? You don't have to, you wouldn't be someone who would feel whose ladle is contaminated. You would be someone who is fully a sister, a child of God, a child of the one, blessed and safe and protected and redeemed. And she's like, let me think about this, right? Because I don't think she knows how she's going to make a living or whatever. And she thinks about it. And you know what she does? She says, okay, I'm in. And he blesses her. And she's changed in that moment. And she goes out to the town. And all the men have slept with her. And they look at her. And they can see that she's not the woman they slept with. Because she is radiant with luminosity and with pride and with love. She's the new creation. And they're like, okay, wait, what's the catch? And she says the same thing that you all heard or said. She said, well, you know what? There's this guy in the next town over. And he told me the truth of who I am. And that's who I am now. And they're like, really, really? And they, and so then it's quantum. They go over. But sometimes you got to do a little bit of magic trick to get people to come back.
Exactly. Can I,
you know, the other thing that this reminds me of, both of these stories?
Yeah.
Because Hahnemann. You got the new. I don't know if new people know much about Hahnemann, and I just barely started to understand what it is. But last year, one of the things we talked about a little bit was Neem Karoli Baba said that Hahnemann was Christ. Same, the same. And I thought about that for a long time, and then it clicked. Oh, I get it. And the idea, I think, and you can you will correct me, I'm sure. But the idea is, this is Ram's. This is God's greatest devotee. And the brilliance of it is it's a monkey. And to me, that means the same as Jesus being a Galilean.
Uh-huh.
You know, the idea is like it's the places that you don't expect it to be. And who would have ever thought that a monkey would be the number one servant of the divine? And that's why that's so brilliant to me. And the story about the well stories and the general complete open-heartedness. Because the idea is, oh, shit, if a monkey could be the great servant of the divine, then I could probably do something, right?
Yeah.
And that sort of openness, that openness.
But that is it.
Yeah.
Well, Ram Dass always said that Ramana Maharshi said, I believe, he said, when it comes to miracles, I give people what they want, so they'll want what I give.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So there's a really interesting thing going on here, and it's sort of what I've been talking about this whole time, which is that the message of all mysticism and spirituality is very, very basic and does not take long to communicate. And it's why every fairy tale starts with someone thinking they have royal blood.
Mm-hmm.
That's the beginning of every, it's Moana thinking she's called to be a something more, right? And that's why we keep seeing that. But the tricky thing is the ego, given the choice between the destination and the journey, will always pick the journey.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the trap that we're sort of stuck in.
Mm-hmm.
We can keep sort of circling it and again and again and again and go, oh, Hanuman's Christ. Okay, well, the Spirit of God was in a man. The Spirit of God was in a monkey. The Spirit of God is in me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm always just itchy to remind us to go, all right, we can circle the laps again and again and again and again and again.
He's become a non-dualist, I'm telling you.
But there's joy there and there's real peace.
Mm-hmm.
Ram Dass says peace cannot exist in the ego. It's made of stuff that does not allow for it. I would add to that, joy cannot exist in your ego. Your brain is designed to reward you with momentary happiness. That's what dopamine and adrenaline and endorphins are. It's to get you to continue a behavior, but they're fleeting in nature so it can train your meat puppet. That's what happiness is. And most people, when they think of joy, they think of eating an ice cream sundae on the beach.
Mm-hmm.
Bullshit. It doesn't exist in that space. You're in the wrong frequency. Step back. That's why I'm like, that's right.
Put that sundae down.
Dude, I ate a sundae on the beach, and it was amazing. But that's not where peace is, and that's not where joy is.
Hanuman, I'm glad you brought Hanuman up. You said a few more things about Hanuman, about what qualities you were starting to kind of identify with before.
Did I?
Yeah,
just
but
now?
I'll say them. No, earlier, like an hour or so ago. I'm going to come back to emptiness. With Hanuman.
Raghu, you're going to circle back to the theme of the retreat that you came up with?
No, Sharon Salzberg.
Oh, pardon me, that you bothered Sharon for?
Yes, yeah. So, okay, little story, Ramayana, which is how we found out about Hanuman. And Hanuman was enlisted by Ram to find his wife who had been abducted by the demon Ravana and taken to Sri Lanka. And Hanuman agreed to help Ram, and he went over there. He found Sita, and he burned down the city, and he came back to Ram, and they told Ram, look what Hanuman, he did all this, exactly what was needed. He took care of it. He found her. He knows now what you need to do to save the scene. So Ram, there's this one moment, and it's called the chapter is called Sundarkand, the beautiful, where Ram asks for Hanuman to come. And this particular scene, so every Tuesday in Kinchi, where we were with Maharaja in the Himalayas, every Tuesday, Sundarkand was read in Hindi, chanted by the local pujari. And when they got to this particular set, every time Maharaji cried, because what happened is Ram said, nobody has ever done what you have done for me. Nobody. And I will give you a boon, anything, in any realm you can have for me. And Hanuman throws himself at Ram's feet.
And says, will you do my podcast? I'm sorry.
Save me, save me from the tentacles of egoism. Okay, that was it. That's all he wanted. Nothing but absolute, pure service, love. That's all he wanted. And that's, to me, what emptiness is all about.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful.
I feel like so much of the emptiness begins with the, I don't know. I don't have a clue. I don't know. There's
you know this, though. You know this. This empty of our little selves so that we can be kind to somebody.
Yeah. But I am so much more drawn and nourished by the promises of faith that we're safe, that in the world of spirit, that there's only one thing. Einstein says this. There's only one thing. You're made of it. The wood is the one thing moving very, very slowly. You know, glaciers are rivers moving very, very slowly. There's a hummingbird. There's a whatever. But there's just this one thing. And when I remember the truth of my spiritual identity, that I'm made of that one thing. I'm made of spirit for spirit to come here and be made bread for the journey of other people that are spirit, that are pure love, that are having a bad day, you know? And so that's what feeds me is not the understanding. And I know that you're right. I absolutely buy it, but it's not it's not a good color on me. I think it's one way to say it, but I'll tell you, I don't think I've told this yet, but I wear a little pendant, that says God's got it from a story my friend Lisa told me from the rooms of recovery of a woman who had not so old, I mean much younger than I am now, who had oral cancer. She's very faithful in this kind of ecumenical way, you know, where we have, you know, wherever you can find a little truth, it's like little chips of gold and you put them in your little tiny bag. And she'd had oral cancer. She had to have, I did tell the story, didn't I? She had part of her tongue and a little bit of jaw removed and tons of chemo, you know, and tons of radiation. And she went into remission for years and years and it came back. So she was sharing this at a meeting because what you do is you find a few safe people and you tell them the truth. She told them she was going to start chemotherapy again the following week. And everyone started doing, this was really apropos last year at the death conference. Everyone starts doing what you do in the pace of death. Oh, you're going to be okay. Oh, you know what? My cousin Connie's beautician had that exact kind of oral cancer and she's fine now. And what she did was Reiki or, you know, what she did anyway. And she just stopped them. And she just waved her hand like that. She went, oh, God's got it. Right? God's got it. Whatever. The fifth great prayer. Whatever. God's got it. And so when I hear that, if I can just remember, like, be here now was it for 15 years. It's all I had to remember. Be here now, you know, avoid the rush. And if I remember God's got it, then I can move into what for me is the emptiness of being more like a child, being able to be here, to be in wonder and curiosity. My partner, my husband, Neil, talks a lot about that curiosity and wonder and spirituality are all exactly the same thing. But if I remember God's got it, then I'm running around. I'm really excited by the world again. I'm in the world, but not of the world, because I'm God's like cutest daughter. And but I'm paying attention, and attention is the message. Wonder and attention, those words ring this gong inside of me, and emptiness, I'm much more like Duncan in that way, that we're both like slight nervous cases.
Yes.
You think.
But then also I believe so much in bird by bird, and that it doesn't happen with the shiny fingers of light that come through the clouds. You know, it comes through when you stop and you notice something really small. Like my experience of healing and of awakening is that I'm kind of encrusted with all the stuff of the world. You know, one of the great alcoholic writers of the forward, Sherwood Anderson said to his wife, he said, the world is a pretty muddy place. It doesn't leave the house very clean. And I feel kind of encrusted, although I often talk about the thin candy shell around M&Ms that surrounds our heart and our freedom and our truth. And so I feel like there's this kind of a little bit of crust. And sometimes some of it, because of trust and surrender, I can get 8% of that encrusted area off me. 8%, and the air can get in. And the breath can get in, and the light can get in, and warmth can get in, and you can get in. I was flying to Africa about 10 years ago, and at the end of the service, there's a very short sort of altar call for if you're very sad about someone, if someone has died or is dying or whatever, you go up, and the congregation of 30 people just lift you in their hearts. And I went up, and I said, you know, I'm a person who's really basically afraid of everything, and I'm going to Africa, and I'm afraid of snakes and terrorists and plane crash. And she said, when you get on a plane, it's a little late for beggy prayers. And she said, it's time for trust and surrender.
Beautiful.
And those words, trust and surrender, are what give me the 8% option to experience the emptiness of a child's wonder and curiosity. So
love that. Great, Annie. Trust and surrender. And by the way, you know, Pete, when you were talking about the first couple of years that you were here and you were like, I'm not getting this, I'm not getting that, you know, you were pretty upset back then.
Oh yeah, it turns out nobody has the same experience here. But I keep projecting myself onto other people. So I find people who it's their first retreat, and I'm like, it's a lot, right? And they're like, no, I'm having a great time. And I'm like, okay, great.
Yeah.
So, but you know, maybe somebody in this room relates to that overwhelm that you can get. Mm-hmm. And I've gotten over it. I actually use this retreat as a marking post, a measuring stick for my growth. You wouldn't think that would be the case. You would think this would be where we come to escape even needing a measuring stick. But this is my measuring stick. Mm-hmm. The more I can just sort of find that right mix of thinking about it enough and not thinking about it too much, mm-hmm. being in that sweet middle area, mm-hmm. and feeling it and being it and really being it, obviously, mm-hmm. as I keep saying.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Instead of going like, do I buy all this? Mm-hmm. Should I learn the Hanuman Chalisa?
Mm-hmm.
Is lovely, but right. who's watching you ask that is a much more beautiful question to me. I'm sorry, I only have one point to make.
Yeah.
But it's a good one.
It's a great one. I mean, it's the one.
I love that one.
Yeah.
Because we can just watch it. I'm like, I think it's so right. I think it's gorgeous that God can be neurotic, mm-hmm. and God can be doubtful, and God can be joyful, and God can sit for kirtan or dance for kirtan or skip kirtan.
Mm-hmm.
Or God can laugh, or God can be threatened, or God can be hurting, or God can be anxious or despondent.
And Jesus wept.
And Christ's suffering is, he's suffering for us. It's our suffering. It's all one. It's all one. It's all one. It's all one.
Yeah, but you know, what I love about Jesus, among many things, is the Garden of Gethsemane. He tried to get out of it.
Yeah.
That's the one that I like. With Hanuman, you don't get that. I don't know of any other avatar that tried to get out of the thing, you know? And he was saying, take this cup away from me. I don't want to do it. There's got to be a way out. You're my dad. Are you seriously going to kill me?
Is there a plan B?
Yeah, this is nuts. Yeah. That, to me, is so accessible. Because, you know, how...
Well, that's the solidarity of Christ. People don't talk about this, but in the Gospel of Mark, Jesus died and is not resurrected. If they were trying to make a text to convince you that it was the one true religion, why would they include four contradictory Gospels? It's inviting you to trans-rationality. It's beyond literal truth. Literal truth is good at building bridges and vaccines and Starbucks, but it's not good at understanding this. It's not going to get anywhere close. And sometimes you need a gospel where Jesus comes back, and sometimes you need one where, man, the dude's dead. Because which story do you need? Where are you? Something is chasing you, seducing you, cooking you dinner, making the bed, playing the music. It wants to merge with you. What's it going to take? I don't give a shit. Which story, which system, which metaphor, which stick of incense, which talk? Get in bed with me. It's it. And it wants you to...
Somebody have sex with Pete.
It wants you to get stirred into it like sugar into iced tea and go away.
It wants you to make love to Pete.
And I was trying to make a point, though, Pete.
Which one?
Those couple of years when you expressed that, we did a podcast one of those years, maybe the second year, the second time you were here. And you were going through this whole litany of, you know, all you guys were with Maharaji, we weren't, so what are we getting out of this?
And you would say, oh, it's all the love, and can't you feel the vibes? And I would say, yeah, you'd be pretty excited if you walked in the door right now, though. Remember?
Yeah. But
I don't buy it. It's just the love. It's just the love. Okay, there he is. Did you look? You know what I mean? Like, it was that sort of feeling.
This man over here, right at the end.
I don't feel that way anymore by him.
No, I know. But I think it's really, it's a good thing. I don't know if you could say it again, but I'll prompt you.
Okay.
Because when he was going through this, you said, seriously, one of the few times you can get serious, you said, He is us. In every person that's sitting here, that love is radiating. And so this whole room is what he is.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
Well, this is, gosh, I don't know. I mean, don't mean to keep going back to Christianity here, but Annie, I'm sure you're, what is it? You'll know the Father by the Son. Is that the line? Mm-hmm. But then also, because when I first met you, boy, was I prepared for you to be a complete fraud. I was ready to get just like complete. I was so cynical. And I remember I'm like, well, here goes another great thing. We'll be here now stuff. I bet he's going to be wearing some ridiculous outfit. And I bet he's going to be all serious and it's going to suck. And then you came down my driveway. It's just Raghu. The most normal, you know, beautiful, normal. But you know what I mean? You're not wearing a cape or something. Yeah, that would have been the word. But
if I had known you better, I would.
But you know, you see, not to negativize it, but if someone's been through trauma, you will see the thumbprint of the trauma in almost everything they do, and until it's healed, and maybe even after it's healed, I don't know. Mm-hmm. But the reverse of that is with Maharaji. I see him in you. And I see him in the satsang, and I definitely experience that spirit in the connections and in the garish synchronicities. You don't just get regular run-of-the-mill synchronicities here. You get synchronicities that wouldn't work in a screenplay. because like synchronicities, like a 9-year-old was writing a movie or something like that. And I don't know if y'all have experienced it, but things that are so beyond. And I want to be cynical. I want to be like, oh, you remember the, we remember the hits. There's no magic. I was just saying that over there, actually. But there is that you experience the miraculous aspect of him here, too. But it's in the connections. It's in the emptiness between
there
us.
There we go. Finally. Finally.
But it turns out that is true. I don't know. Does anybody relate to the I missed Maharaji feeling? Any of you? The feeling that you missed out, that you would have loved to have been there in the 70s and sat with him? The rest of you are just fine? Okay, I wasn't clear, because once you knew what I meant, it was everybody. What's up?
Krishnadas.
Man, I get it. I know, but I already said the great quote from your documentary, where you say your guru is what's looking out your eyes right now. The beautiful thing, and it took me a while, is that it is true. But for a while, I had to be God being frustrated that I missed God. And resisting the curriculum, it's not a flaw in the system. It was the sandpaper. It was the fire. I needed to go through that and let go of a lot to go, oh, right, it's in me. Yeah. It's right here. And when I sit with RD and when I sit with you, when I'm sitting with you guys right now, why do we stay for the mala ceremony after you get your mala? Because we're under the blanket. It's as real as if we were there. I can't compare it to being there because I wasn't there. But I'm happy to say that I thank you. Yes. I went from feeling that like, nice for you to say, to like, oh man, I had to turn around. The door was unlocked. The door was unlocked. Oh,
beautiful, beautiful. We're at the end now of this little session. And so, Pete, I do want you to say your book is coming out. And,
yes.
And I think it's a wonderful book.
May 14th, it's called Comedy, Sex, God. It's about those three
Pete
things.
Pete is a comedy, sex, God.
If you read the book, I get that a lot. If you read the book, you'll see that most of the sex is with myself. But it's about those three things. And it has that quote, Pete's not enlightened, but I am. And it tells the story of Ram Dass. It tells the story of Maharaji. And it tells the story of my first retreat and the resistance and all of that. Mm. But better than just the bitterness, it includes the sweetness. It also includes losing my traditional Christian faith. Mm-hmm. But there's this great rabbinical saying that any dumb donkey can tear down a barn, but it takes a special one to build one. Isn't that great?
Yeah.
So I meet a lot of people that lose their faith, and they love telling me about the nothing was written down about Jesus for 70 years after he died, and that's all fun. And I'm like, oh, great. Have you figured out that your parents were just people too? You know what I mean? Like, there's all this like bitterness that's fun to work out, and it's very rock and roll, and it's a Kurt Cobain poster in your bedroom, and that's essential. But I always want to be like, talk to me in 5 years when you've built something new. So I like pointing out that the book isn't just, oh, I got a divorce and God let me down, so I lost my faith. It's then I took psychedelics, then I found Ram Dass, then I found Maharaji, and here we all are. So it's a happy ending, spoiler alert.
So thank you, Pete.
Thank you, Raghu.
Annie. Of course, Annie's, I don't know if there's any of your books left, right? They're all gone.
Can I pitch my book?
Yes. Please do.
I've got a book coming out on Penguin Press. It's called Drink Beer Now. It's about working. It's how to meditate when you're hammered drunk. So it's basically
thank you so
how
much.
To drink and meditate.
And
Raghu
Ram.
Raghu.